Ladies and gentlemen, Mohtarama Fatima Jinnah.
While sharing with you the sentiments aroused in our hearts by the auspicious occasion of Qaid-e-Azam's birthday, I have the privilege of speaking a few words to you. I am happy to have this opportunity, for it enables me to touch afresh, if I may, the springs of thought and feeling which concern the integrity, stability, and well-being of our beloved country. Our thoughts today inevitably turn to the father of the nation, who by his lifelong struggle won for us the status of a free and independent people, than which there is no greater blessing in this life. When 81 years ago he was born in the city of Karachi, little did anyone know that he would return to it one day to make it the capital of a great Muslim state, the hope of millions of devoted hearts. It pleased God to choose the Qaid-e-Azam as the instrument for the fulfillment of the mission of saving the flame of Islam from extinction in this subcontinent, and of providing Muslims with a haven where they can shape their life according to their faith and genius, and demonstrate the soundness of their ideals and values. I'm afraid in the welter of internecine feuds and party strife, the real significance of the emergence of Pakistan as a state with a purpose and a mission is being lost. From a lifetime study, observation, and actual experience of the play of social, cultural, economic, and political factors and forces in this subcontinent, Qaid-e-Azam came to the conclusion that there could be no hope for the Muslims in any scheme of freedom based on the concept of a single nationhood and state, which he was fully convinced was an illusion and a mirage and not a reality. In boldly voicing the concept of the Muslim nation, Qaid-e-Azam was merely giving expression and tangible direction to the hitherto inarticulate but honestly felt stirrings in the hearts of the Muslim people. In doing this, he undertook a tremendous responsibility, although it involved the determined opposition of two powerful forces who were bent upon keeping the Muslims as a helpless minority condemned to a life of political and economic serfdom. The movement for Pakistan, which Qaid-e-Azam launched, was thus ethical in inspiration and ideological in content. The story of this movement is the story of the ideals of equality, fraternity, social and economic justice, struggling against the forces of domination, exploitation, intolerance, and tyranny. A state ushered into existence under such circumstances and with such objective in view can develop and grow strong only by keeping constantly alive as operative factors the ideals and values which inspired its creation. That is what Qaid-e-Azam meant when he declared as early as October 1947 that the establishment of Pakistan, for which we have been striving for the last 10 years, is by the grace of God an established fact today. But the creation of a state of our own was a means to an end and not the end in itself. The idea was that we should have a state in which we could live and breathe as free men and which we could develop according to our own light and culture, and where principles of Islamic social justice could find free play. Lest we forget the essential nature of Pakistan as a state, let me recall to your mind a very significant passage from one of his speeches during his historic tour of East Pakistan in March 1948. Namely, Pakistan is the embodiment of the unity of Muslim nation, and so it must remain. That unity, we as true Muslims must zealously safeguard and preserve. I have reiterated these points at some length because of the growing threat to the postulates of Pakistan's existence as a state. The question now arises, why should a people who achieved a state in the teeth of the fiercest opposition known to history, with such grand and noble concepts before them, find themselves in the sorry plight which afflicts them today? Why should there be despondency in place of hope? Why should zest and determination be supplanted by apathy and lassitude? Why should frustration and political waywardness take place of constructive enthusiasm and robust political activity? When you could move mountains in the days of your political subjection, why should you feel helpless as a free people with infinitely greater resources at your disposal? It is for you to ponder over these questions. Surely you possess the same qualities and potentialities as before. You have not undergone any intrinsic metamorphosis. Your difficulties are due partly to the deviation of leaders and parties from the principles and ideals of the Pakistan movement, and partly to your own indifference and neglect. Remember that Pakistan came into being as an ideological state, and it can exist only as such. The fulfillment of the mission that Pakistan represented demanded unswerving adherence to its basic ideology and untiring efforts to build up its polity and economy in accordance with that ideology. It was the tragic irony of faith that before its integrity could be fortified and its ideological foundation strengthened, the country's destiny passed into the hands of elements who had not shared the faith and the struggle which accounted for the birth of Pakistan. While this is indeed deplorable, the people cannot evade their share of responsibility. You can expect benefits and advantages to flow from freedom, but you have to be prepared to shoulder the responsibilities and obligations which freedom brings in its wake. Indeed, freedom means unrestricted opportunity to strive and work for the evolution of the society of your dreams. It means constant vigil and ceaseless action. In a free democratic society, the people have to play a very positive and significant role. Today, the National Parliament, consisting of 78 members who are supposed to represent 80 million people, are doing what they like, and there is nobody to question them. Everything revolves round them. This situation has risen because the manner in which they were returned provides no check on their conduct. The people cannot and must not be mute spectators of what is done in their name, on their behalf, with regard to the conduct of the affairs of the state. The people are the real sovereign power. It is for them to see that the organs of the state function in consonance with their will and wishes. There is no justification for an attitude of indifference on your part. When you see evidence of deviation from your cherished ideals and values, or find things going wrong, it is not only your right, but also your duty to create, by all legitimate means open to you, a climate of opinion which would rectify errors and compel respect for the people's wishes and aspirations. You have to realize, not only to realize and appreciate the immense power that lies latent in an organized, disciplined and sensitive public opinion. Look within yourselves. Search your hearts. Create your own power by the use of your latent faculties. If you recapture your soul and galvanize your energies with faith in your country and your ideology, you will be releasing such currents of thought and action as can change the entire face of the country and set it on the road to progress and prosperity. Here, let me turn for a moment to those who profess to happen to be the leaders of public life. I would not refer here to their many faults and failings, but there is one basic point to which I must draw their attention pointedly. They have tried all methods and devices which have failed to do good to themselves or to the country. What is the main and real cause of this failure? The reason is, they have never given a chance to real democracy to function, because they seem to think that the people are ignorant and do not understand things, and there would be chaos if power goes into their hands. But I ask them, what greater chaos and confusion can there be than the one which prevails in the country today? Let me tell them that they have always overlooked the profound truth that real power and authority rests in and accrues from the people. Backdoor methods may bring some temporary success, but they never solve the problem and certainly can never help the country to attain a modicum of equilibrium and stability which is so essential for its orderly progress and development. Indeed, its very existence. In a democratic society, the emphasis has to be on collective life and principles and not individuals. A society which is ruled by ideas and principles lives and thrives, but it stagnates and withers if it allows itself to be dominated by the whims and fancies of individuals. You have only to look to the example of Qaid-e-Azam. He never looked to individuals. He took inspiration from the people and relied on their support and confidence. Therein lay the secret of his success and the success of the movement he led. As he himself said on one occasion, "It is now the authority of the millat that you have to bow to, though you may be the tallest poppy in the land." That is the lesson which all those who aspire to popular leadership have to learn. Whatever aspirations you have, whatever may be your program and policy, can best be achieved and implemented if you turn to the people and win their trust, approval, and confidence. There is no problem and no difficulty which cannot be solved if you can approach it with the assurance of organized and enlightened public opinion behind you. It is time that all methods of short-circuiting public opinion and public demands were given up. Those who resort to maneuvers and machinations only succeed in raising a Frankenstein, which ultimately threatens to devour them. It is in everyone's interest to return to the path of having all issues debated and decided in the open forum of public opinion. Before I conclude, I must tell you that we are passing through very critical times. The supreme interests of the country demand that everyone should curb personal ambitions and dedicate himself to the cause of the integrity and stability of the country. We should be actuated only by one aim, namely to bring about a set of conditions in which the people will be able to exercise their sovereignty, because that is the only panacea for all the ills from which the country has suffered so long. In the words of Qaid-e-Azam, I say to you, 80 millions of Muslims have nothing to fear. They have their destiny in their own hands. And as a well-knit, solid, organized, united force can face any danger and withstand any opposition to its united front and wishes. There is the magic power in your hands. Be true and loyal, and I feel confident that success is with you. Qaid-e-Azam, Zindabad.